Morning. Yesterday we talked about whether there is a prohibition to return to or to live in Egypt and under what circumstances. I was going to move on directly from there to asking the same question about Spain after the expulsion of Jews from Spain. Out of curiosity, how many of you have heard of the prohibition on living in Spain? Anybody? Most people have, which is interesting because it doesn't exist. So we'll talk about that. At least it probably doesn't exist. But Yitzi brought up something yesterday which was a tangent, but actually relates in a way to our discussion. We're not going to have a big discussion about talking in shul, but relates in a way. So as Yitzi mentioned, the Rambam banished Chazaras HaShatz, in a sense. Originally, the way Shemoneh Esrei was designed, the Gemara, was that there were a lot of people didn't know how to daven. So the people who knew how to daven would daven silently. And while they did that, the Shliach Tzibur, the Chazan, would prepare himself, because they didn't have Sidurim either. So he would review Shemoneh Esrei silently so that he could then say it out loud to be motzi the people who didn't know how to daven. During Chazar Shatz, everyone's supposed to stand silently and say Amen. The Rambam saw that the people who knew how to daven, who had daven to themselves, were talking during Chazar Shatz and setting a bad example for the people who didn't know how to daven and should have been listening to the Chazan. And so he established that everyone who knew how to daven would start Shemoneh Esrei together. The Chazan would say it out loud. They would say Kiddusha, and then everyone would daven. Everyone who knew how to daven would continue davening, and supposed to be word for word with the Chazan. And those who didn't know would listen to the Chazan. And that way, the davening was shortened, the opportunity for talking was shortened. And Rambam died in 1204, so this was sometime before that. And this continued to be the way it was done in Egypt, and it spread a little bit to Eretz Yisrael, to Gaza, and to Syria. Those places are specifically mentioned in the Tshuvos that discuss the subject, until the 1500s, when the Radvaz, who was the rabbi of Egypt, as we mentioned yesterday, he explained why he felt he was allowed to live in Egypt. He wanted to change back to the way that the Gemara said to do it. And the Rambam himself says that's the way it's supposed to be done, the way the Gemara says to do it. The Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, you won't find any mention of this decree in the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam codifies the Gemara that you're supposed to have the silence for necessary first and then Chazaras Shatz. But in his letters, he writes that he changed I don't want to use the word change the minhag, because that was the big discussion was, if the Rambam changed the minhag, who are we to change it back? And the Radvaz said, no. He didn't change the minhag. He made a temporary decree. So what does any of this have to do with us? So one of the issues that was raised against by the people who opposed the Radvaz was, how come nobody tried to change it back before? Okay, Rambam died in 1204. It's now 1539, I believe it was. And how come nobody tried to change it before? And the Radvaz says that during that roughly 300-year period, most of the rabbis in Egypt were just passing through and therefore didn't want to get involved in local affairs. Alexandria was a big port for people coming from Europe and other places, mostly Europe, to go to Eretz Yisrael, would pass through the port of Alexandria and then make their way by land to Eretz Yisrael. So Radvaz says they were just passing through. They didn't want to get involved. And so nobody ever tried to change it before. So there are some who understand the Radvaz as saying, since everybody knows you're not supposed to settle in Egypt, every rabbi who came through the port of Alexandria just saw himself as passing through and not settling in Egypt, and therefore didn't want to get involved in local affairs. So that was one thing. The other thing, another argument that the Radvaz uses is that now that in those days, in the Rambam's time, Egypt was Egypt, and Spain was Spain, and Italy was Italy, and nobody ever mixed. But now, after the Jews have been expelled from Spain, all of a sudden, Jewish communities with different minhagim are mixing in communities. So here in Egypt, we have the Jews from Catalonia and the Jews from Aragon and the Jews from this part of Spain, the Jews from that part of Spain. Those are provinces in Spain, as you know. And they all have their different minhagim, and we need to do something to standardize. And therefore, I want to standardize Egyptian practice with the rest of the world, which is the correct practice. And so that fact that all of a sudden, after Jews were expelled from Spain, different communities that never crossed paths before are suddenly mixing in the same city plays into this discussion as well, as of whether there is a prohibition of going back to Spain, as we will see. So that is a connection between what seemed to be, and mostly was, a tangent to the discussion that we're having. And it's discussed in, there are different collections of Tshuvos of the Rambam, and the one I have, Pe'er Hador, is actually just discussed in a footnote on page Reish Sadi Aleph. And the Tshuvos of the Radvaz, Chelek Dalet, Simon Sadi Dalet, is where he primarily discusses it. Part of the problem, the Radvaz says, is that this decree had the opposite effect of the intended effect. Instead of leading to more quiet, it led, after Kedusha, people, instead of davening word by word, would daven ahead and finish in front ahead of the chazan and talk. So it didn't actually have the desired effect anyway, according to Radvaz. Radvaz says, I saw it with my own eyes. It wasn't having the desired effect. So that is that discussion. There's a legend that there was a decree, a cherem, against Jews returning to Spain after the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. A cherem is essentially a ban, an excommunication. It means, unlike an oath, where to be binding, I have to take the oath, you 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 have to take the oath. The cherem is where Beis Din or the rabbis get together and impose, whether you like it or not, an oath on you not to do something. So it's today used primarily. I mean, it's also used as you don't like someone, you put them in cherem. That's a serious matter. You shouldn't do that. But it's used today primarily when somebody refuses an order of Beis Din, in particular an order if someone refuses an order to give a get, so he can be put in cherem. He can be banned. That's how it's used. But it's an order of Beis Din banning something, and so. The question is whether there was a cherem banning Jews from returning to Spain. You would think that if such a thing existed, that Barbanel would mention it. Barbanel is one of the most prolific writers of all time, Torah writers of all time. Barbanel lived through the expulsion of Jews from Spain, and 16 years after, he died in 1508. And he writes extensively about the expulsion of the Jews from Spain in the introductions to his different volumes of the different volumes of his commentary on Tanakh. He writes extensively about Jewish history in Spain and his own personal experiences. And you would think if such a cherem existed, he would have known about it and would have written about it. Doesn't say a word. The earliest source which Poskim discuss, and most of the discussion of this, is in the 20th century Poskim. Why? The expulsion of Jews from Spain, which sometimes people confuse with the Inquisition, was in 1492. The Inquisition started before 1492. The Inquisition was the requirement that Jews convert to Catholicism. In 1492, an order was issued by King Ferdinand, Queen Isabella, Machshmam, that no Jew be found in the lands of under their reign. The Inquisition was not officially abolished until 1834, and Jews were not officially permitted to return to Spain until 1968. However, for a number of reasons, Jews were interested in returning to Spain in the 1930s, either for business purposes or to escape Germany after Hitler came to power in 1933. In 1936, the King of Spain was overthrown by Franco. And so there's discussion in the Poskim in that time period about the permissibility of returning to Spain.
And so the question was, can Jews return to Spain? It wasn't a practical question before that, because any Jew who went to Spain was putting his life at risk. He could be burnt at the stake.
Okay. There was no Jewish
community. I don't know. I can't say there's no Jewish community, but there was no legal Jewish community in Spain. Now, in the 20th century, the question is there any problem with going to Spain? And everyone had heard that there was a cherem against going to Spain. But no one knows where this cherem is. No historian has ever found it, and no Torah gadol has ever found it in any sefer. So what the earliest source that the later poskim discuss is a tshuva of someone known as the Mabit, Rav Moshe ben Yosef Tirani, who lived in Tzfat in the 1500s. And he writes something which is ambiguous that is brought as a proof both ways on this subject. The question that he's discussing, this is in the Tshuvos Mabit, Simon Shin Zion, is, it says, a city somewhere, doesn't say what city, but presumably in Italy, made the Jewish community made a resolution that if a person and his father were born in Italy, he is obligated to follow the Minhagim of Italy. Whereas if it's the first generation in Italy, you don't have to follow the Minhagim in Italy, you follow the Minhagim of Barcelona or Madrid or wherever you, or Lisbon, Portugal, wherever you came from. But once you are the second generation in Italy, you have to follow the Minhagim of Italy. And the community of Aragon, Spain, living in Italy, because this is in the 1500s after the Jews were expelled from Spain, objected. And they asked the Mabit, is this right? Can such a thing be imposed on us? So some community in Italy, it doesn't say which community, some community in Italy. So the people in that community in Italy who came from Aragon, Spain, objected to this. And in particular, in the course of his tshuva, the Mabit says, Ein Sham, or Yehudim ba'Aragon, ze shivim shana. There have not been any Jews in Aragon for 70 years. Vanu betuchim shlo yehal od sham Yehudi, and we are confident that no Jew will ever live there again. Ki akeli brachu mekabetz nidchei amo Yisrael le'eretz Yisrael b'zman hakarov. Because in the near future, Hashem is going to take the Jews back to Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't say we're confident no Jew will ever live there again because there's a cherem on living in Spain, because no Jew will ever set foot in Spain again. He doesn't say that. He says there haven't been any Jews in Aragon for 70 years, and we're confident there never will be because Mashiach's coming. So there are those who bring that as a proof that there was no such ban on returning to Spain, because if there was, he would have said no Jew will ever live in Aragon again because there's a ban on living in Aragon. That's one way to interpret this. The other way to interpret this, which some poskim interpret this, is that he's confirming the existence of a ban. Because how does he know that no Jew will ever live in Aragon again? And don't say it's because Mashiach's coming and we're all going to Eretz Yisrael, because then he should have said, and by the way, no Jews are going to be living in Italy very soon either. Okay. So he wasn't saying no Jew will ever return to Spain because Mashiach's coming tomorrow, because then he would have said, don't bother me with this silly Shaila because Mashiach's coming tomorrow anyway and we're all going to Eretz Yisrael. Right. So he didn't say that, so it must be that he was aware of a ban on Jews living in Spain. So that is the earliest source that doesn't discuss the subject but is used by both sides to try to bring a proof as to whether or not there's a ban on Jews living in Spain. As I said, most of the discussion of this subject is in the 20th century. Rav Kook, in a letter, Chelek Bet, Tuf Reish Lamed Bet, in his letters, the entire letter is about three sentences, it's big, and then he says in a P.S. to his brother Shmuel, regarding living in Spain, I have not found explicitly whether there was a cherem or a shvua regarding this, and presumably it's no stricter than living in Egypt, which is only prohibited on a permanent basis, but one is not prohibited from going to Egypt for business and to come back. So Rav Kook is saying, I don't know any sources about this, but if there's any prohibition, it certainly is not a prohibition on going to Spain for business. Because they would not, the rabbis at that time would not have made a stricter decree than the Torah makes against Egypt, and the Torah doesn't prohibit going to Egypt for business. The Munkach Rebbe, Minchas Lazar, died in 1937. This is in Chelak Hey Simon Yud Aleph in the Minchas Lazar. So he says,
How does that relate to the Gzeirim? They do make stronger rules to make defenses against the Torah. Fences.
That's a good question. That's a very good question, which has broader implications. Because, for example, the Radvaz was asked, we have a rule, when a Chachami make Gzeira, you can't annul it. Later generations can't annul a Gzeira of earlier generations unless they're greater than the earlier generations, which by definition they aren't. So there's a distinction between the answer to both your question and that question is there's a distinction between a Gzeira, which is made to protect a Torah halacha. For example, the Gzeira of Muksa on Shabbos. In order to that you not come to write, the Chachamim said don't pick up a pencil. In order that you not come to carry, the Chachamim said, don't pick up this or that. That's a gzera.
Prohibition.
Right. These are not living, not to live in Spain is not a gzera to protect a Torah mitzvah. It's totally independent. Or not to say Chazar Sashatz was not a gzera to protect a Torah mitzvah. It was a completely freestanding Takana. It wasn't a gzera. It was called a takana. It's an establishment, something that's established. So it's a different category in halacha. So the Minchas Lazar says that, again, I have no proof either way, whether there ever was a ban on living in Spain, but it's nearly certain that there was not. And then he goes on and discusses, as other poskim do, and even if there was, we could speculate endlessly about if there was such a ban, what was the ban? And in effect, it can't be binding on just me and you, because nobody knows what it was, and there are endless permutations to what it might have been if it even existed. Yeah.
I don't know if I missed this, but did you at the beginning state any rationale, like don't go to people that treat you badly or don't go because it's dangerous,
So the rationale would be the first, that they're so evil, we don't want to, like there are people who say today, my son went to Poland before Pesach, and my father said, I don't understand how anybody could set foot or spend a penny in that country.
Yeah.
Right? And particularly now when there's the whole issue of denial of Polish involvement in the Holocaust, it's been in the news. So that's the rationale.
No one in Poland okay. This year.
Some historians say that maybe the reason people think there's a ban when there doesn't seem to be any evidence of one is because as a practical matter, no Jew could go to Spain because he would have to pretend he was Christian, and that's against halacha,
yeah.
To pretend you're Christian. So, but the reason for the ban, if there was one, would be the first thing you said, is essentially to punish them. We don't want to have anything to do, punish the Egyptians, the Spanish. We don't want to have anything to do with them. Rav Waldenberg, a relatively contemporary posek, passed away within the last 10 years, I think. He's mainly known for his medical tshuvos. He was his official job was as rabbi of Shari Tzedek Hospital. And he's at the forefront of a lot of innovative medical halacha. But he also wrote his Shas and Shuvos, like 22 volumes, and he wrote extensively about other things, including whether he was asked whether there's any prohibition on Jews living in Spain. This is in 1951. And he says that presumably you're asking because of this rumor that everyone knows about, that there's a prohibition on living in Spain. And I've looked high and low, and I can't find any such hint of it. I've looked in the Svarim, I've spoken to historians, no evidence of such a thing. And if there was, we don't know what form it took. Was it a cherem that was imposed on people, or was an oath among the people living at that time, which would have different effects, to what degree it's binding on other people or not. And furthermore, was it made in a way that it cannot be revoked? Maybe it was only for that generation. And even if it wasn't only for that generation, maybe it was only for descendants of Jews who were expelled from Spain. So I was going to tell you, clearly there's no such prohibition. However, then I thought about it some more, and I said, if everyone thinks that there's such a prohibition, I always thought there was. I took a survey before you came in, and nobody had heard of it. Did you think there was a ban on Jews living in Spain? You had no. No. Okay. I grew up thinking there was. Okay. And lots of people, you take a survey, I think you'll find a lot of people think there is. Okay. So he says that if there's such a rumor floating around, and it's now 500 years later, there's got to be some basis for it if so many people think it, that it's true. And there he says that we have an expression about the Jewish people, Hanach lehem l'Yisrael im ein nevim heim b'nei nevim heim. Leave the Jewish people alone. If they're not prophets, they're descendants of prophets. In other words, and this is an important concept in general, there are a lot of hagim out there, many of which have no real basis. And I'm not talking about modern chumras that get invented every week, but a lot of things that we do that we don't know, have no idea why. And general rule is they must have come from somewhere. And we don't easily dismiss minhagim.
That could be a shear too.
That could be a shear too. Right. And not saying to blindly accept anything. My wife in December was in Israel. She went at the olive wood factory in Mea Shearim and got into a discussion with the woman who sitting behind a desk who does all the writing on the olive wood, and discovered that this woman composes prayers. People come in, they say, I need a prayer for this, and she makes up a prayer on the spot. So not everything is a minhag. Got to be careful. But minhagim that are prevalent in large parts of the Jewish community, we don't easily dismiss them, because we say the Jewish people, if they're not prophets, they're children of prophets, and there's a basis for things. So he says, I can't easily dismiss this. And then he says, I asked the Sephardi chief rabbi, Rav Ben Sion Uziel, Shlita, now Zatzal, if he knows of any source for this prohibition of living in Spain, and he said he does not. But nevertheless, Sephardim have a tradition that there is such a prohibition, even though nobody knows where it came from. It's not written anywhere, but it is a tradition. And he says that whenever he gets a request, as chief rabbi of Israel, he gets requests from Jewish communities all over the place to send them rabbis and send them teachers. And when he gets a request from Spain, he finds some excuse to avoid sending a rabbi or a teacher, because he has a tradition that there is such a prohibition, even though he doesn't know its origin or where it's written. And then Waldenberg brings.
After the ban, after Franco, you said lifted. So then, why should it still be?
No,
1951.
No. If the ban we're talking about was a ban made by Jewish people, for Franco lifted the Inquisition, he ended the Inquisition. But what Waldenberg is saying is that Uziel says that we, the Jewish people, some segment of the Jewish people made a ban on resettling in Spain.
Not related to the Inquisition.
That's the discussion. We don't know. That's the point. We don't know what this ban was. Therefore, we don't know under what circumstances it ends. That's his position. We'll see in a second. Rav Ovadia Yosef has a different position. Okay. But that's exactly. We don't know what it was, so we don't know under what circumstances it ends. The Tzitz Eliezer continues, and he says that there's a common Sephardi last name, Toledano. And he says that the Toledano family has a tradition that the origin of their name is Toledo. No. They came from Toledo, and they will never go back to Toledo. And that's their tradition, and that supports the theory that there was some kind of ban. And then he brings the Mabit that we brought, and he's the one who interprets it, as I said, as proof that there was a ban on Jews living in Spain, from the fact that the Mabit is so confident that Jews will never go back to Aragon, he could only know that if there was a ban. Apparently Spanish. I don't speak Spanish. Rav Avadia Yosef, in 1978, he writes, I was invited by the Jewish community in Spain to come to the dedication of a new Jewish school in Madrid. And so this caused me to ask the question, is it a problem for Jews to go to Spain? And he says, I looked high and low. There's no written source for any such prohibition on Jews going to Spain. He then discusses that even if there was, these are technical halachic issues, okay, under what circumstances is a cherem binding on later generations, on people who did not participate, on other communities. That's a halachic discussion. But for example, we know that we have the famous cherem Rabbeinu Gershom, that you can't have two wives, and that not to open other people's mail, it's only binding on Ashkenazim. Okay. That's why at your daughter's wedding, she married a Sephardi, in the Ksuba, he accepted upon himself not to take a second wife, because he technically could take a second wife. You'd kill him, but he technically could. Okay. So, because a cherem can only be binding on the community that made the cherem. You can't impose a cherem on somebody else. To a certain extent, those are things discussed. Rav Avadia Yosef discusses, and of course, it's true about technical issues. Even if there was a cherem, would it be binding? And he concludes that there is no, that if there ever was such a cherem, I don't think there was, but if there ever was, it doesn't exist anymore. It's not binding on me, not binding on, now that like Yitzi asked, now that the Inquisition is over, the reason for it doesn't exist anymore. And unlike Exera, where we don't say the reason ended, so now we, for example, we have a Exera not to drink wine touched by a non-Jew. So that we don't marry them. Nowadays, people socialize more over beer than over wine. So why is the decree on wine, not on beer? Why? Because when Chachamim make a decree, we don't have the power to change that decree now. Nobody today, this will be significant in a second, we're talking about Germany, nobody today has the power to make a decree over all the Jewish people. So he says that even if there was such a cherem, they only made it on themselves not to return to Spain. They didn't make it on the whole world. And if you'll say they did make it on the whole world, they didn't make it on visiting Spain, like the Minchas Lazar says, like Rav Kook said, rather. And he says from the Mabit that we read, it seems that there was no such ban ever. And therefore, I did go to Spain, and the king invited me for a meeting with him, and it was a great honor for the Jewish people. It was like the king had Rav Avadia Yosef over for tea. Okay. So he says it was a great moment for the Jewish people when I went to Spain. So that is Rav Avadia Yosef says. In the course of this tshuva, he discusses an attempt that was made after the Holocaust to impose a ban on Jews going to Germany. This is discussed in the tshuvos he summarizes, a tshuva of someone named Rav Meshulam Roth, who was a rabbi in Chernovitz, Romania, before the Holocaust, and after the Holocaust was a member of the chief rabbinate of Israel. There's a rav in a prominent rav and posek in Israel, and he writes, as summarized by Rav Avad Yosef, says that there is a movement to try to ban Jews from returning to Germany. And he says that such a thing not only is not right, it's contrary to halacha. Because, first of all, we don't have the power to make decrees over the Jewish people. There's nobody today who has the power to make a decree over the whole Jewish people. unlike in time of Chazal, they could make decrees on all the Jewish people. We can't.
That's a Shiloh for someone to make a ban on, like Greater Washington, do you? Maybe Greater Washington's too big. White Oak.
If Rav would impose something on the community, it's binding on the community. If you don't like it and you leave, it's not binding on you anymore. In the community, in that shul, White Oak's unusual in that, you know, most of us in White Oak, nearly all of us belong to the same shul, right? So in Kent Mill, where there are five shuls, everything today is shul-based, or Hasidic Rebbe-based, or yeshiva-based. So a Rosh Yeshiva could make a decree on his yeshiva. If you don't like it, go to another yeshiva. The Vod could make something on the community, right? Could make a ban on the community, but again, it's only binding on you as long as you live in that community. If you don't like it, and this is why I mentioned that cherims are made on people who disregard orders of Beis Din, for example, people who refuse to give a get. The reason it's not really effective is because if such a ban is made, one thing you can't do, you can't give him an aliyah in shul. It's easy enough for him to move to the next shul, which doesn't know about the ban, especially in New York or in Israel, where there's shuls on every street corner. You just move to the next shul. In a place like Washington, that could be more effective because there are a limited number of shuls. And if all the rabbis in Washington said, we're not going to give so-and-so an aliyah, then it would be effective, pretty much. He wouldn't get an aliyah. So that's the nature of our diffused Jewish community. In response to Rav Roth's argument that we don't have the power to make a ban on all the Jewish people, another rabbi in that time, in the 1950s, argued, don't you think that if all the rabbis in Israel got together and made a ban on Germany, that the rest of the world would follow? You know, the rabbis in America would defer to the rabbis in Israel on such a thing. If it was really all the rabbis in Israel or all the prominent rabbis in Israel got together and made this ban. So there were those who argued that wasn't a good argument. But furthermore, he says, we have a rule that you don't make a decree on the people that the people can't, that's too harsh, that people can't live by. And a ban on, particularly in the 1950s, a ban on Germany would be too harsh because there were still Jewish people who had property in Germany. There were people in Israel who had property in Germany that they're trying to recover. And to tell them you can't go to Germany would not be fair. And they wouldn't listen to it because they have their property. They want to go recover it. So he says that this would surely be a decree that people couldn't live by. And then he says, I can't find any source that there was a decree on Spain, and why should we do more than they did? True, the Holocaust was far worse than anything the Spanish did, but nevertheless, there's no such decree on Spain, Rav Roth says, and therefore, you know, we can't make a decree on Germany. Rav Adi Yosef says, I'm amazed that Rav Roth did not quote a Rishon who supports him. Sefer Hasidim, was a Rishon in Germany. I think he died in 1217. So the period of the Crusades, right after the period of the Crusades. And he writes in paragraph Taf Chaf Dalad in Sefer Hasidim, Be'ir achat hayas sar ra. There was a city that had an evil nobleman. It's an oxymoron, but you know what I mean? An evil nobleman running the city. And he wanted to make the Jews in his city apostatize. And he fled. And they wanted to make a decree. The Jews wanted to make a decree that no Jew should ever return to that city. And a wise man said to them, don't place a stumbling block in front of later generations. If you say no Jew should ever live in that city, 800 years later, who's going to know about it? And they're going to go, just as we find with Spain. We've heard rumors that there was a ban on going to Spain, but we have no evidence of it. And now we're all confused and mixed up. And so it would be a stumbling block in front of us. Ela tigzru l'zman shasarim b'chayim. Hacham inav brosho shel davar. If you want to make a ban, make a ban. As long as that evil nobleman is still alive, no Jew should return to that city. And a wise man has his eyes in his head. He foresees the future and doesn't make decrees that are too hard to live by. So Rav Adi Yosef says, Rav Roth could have quoted that and said, if we make a ban on Jews ever going back to Germany 500 years from now, who's going to know about it? And therefore, it's not a good idea. So the end result is there is no ban on Jews going to Germany. There obviously are people who have emotional feelings about it. I may have mentioned, I don't remember. It's an incredible tshuva where Rav Zilberstein, one of the sons of law of Rav Yashiv, the Rav in Bnei Brak, right? Some of his svarim very popular. He was asked about a guy met a girl, and they went out. Doesn't say how many times they went out before his parents did any research about her. Such things do happen. And then when they looked into her, they learned she was a convert, which was not a problem. He wasn't a Kohen. He could marry a convert. Her grandfather was a concentration camp guard. And not only that, they actually discovered that her grandfather killed his grandfather. And is this, and they wanted to break up the shidduch, and the guy didn't want to break up the shidduch. He liked her. And so Rav Zilberstein says, I asked Rav Yashiv, my father-in-law Rav Yashiv, and Rav Yashiv said, this is not a halachic question. This is a purely emotional issue. Can they live with it or not? And Rav Zilberstein interprets that. He gives a very interesting idea about how do you decide if something should bother you in a shidduch? And he says that, ask yourself, if I only found out about this after we were married, would I get divorced? And if the answer is no, then it should not be a consideration in the shidduch. So he told the guy, if 10 years from now you found out that her grandfather killed your grandfather, would you divorce her? If not, then marry her. If yes, then don't marry her. Okay. That was interesting. But when it comes to Germany and Poland and all of these things, it's emotional. It's not, there are not any halachic bans. In terms of Spain, we don't know. There's no evidence of it, but some poskim say we should take it into account, and other poskim say we just ignore it totally because there's no evidence that there's such a ban, and even if there was, times have changed now, and so on. So that is the subject of living in Spain and Germany and talking in shul. Have a good day.